And stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing interviews with two performers, Carolyn Michael and Christine Alexander, both of whom will be performing in Sarah Solo 2016. If you were lucky enough to be at Sarah Solo 2015, then you know how exciting that festival can be. And Carolyn and Christine are bound to be two of the headliners. So hang on, listen to these two extraordinary women talk about their lives and give you a taste of what you might expect when you come to see them at Sarah Solo 2016.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap.
Show is about being the person you really are. As a therapist, it's clear to me that too many of us arrive out of childhood as a version of who we really are, leaving behind qualities, instincts, interests, curiosities, ways of being. How could this happen? Well, if a parent or an older sibling or a teacher or a religious authority, or the culture itself, tells us that something about us is not okay. Something that we do, something that we are, makes people laugh, or criticize, or punish, or tease, or bully. If something that we are that we can't help, the way we look, the way we talk, the way we eat, the way we laugh, our sexual orientation, our interest in dance or art. If any of these things brings a response from those people that are important to us that makes us feel bad about ourselves, well, we begin immediately to downplay that thing. I am really not that. We begin to pretend that we don't have that interest, that we don't feel that way, that we don't act that way. We try to change the way we walk and talk and eat and stand. And sometimes we're really successful at it. We get so good at pretending that this isn't who we are that we actually forget some really important things about ourselves. And that can work really well in our childhood by minimizing the amount of criticism, judgment, teasing that we are at the mercy of. But you don't leave important parts of yourself behind without paying a price. You may not even be aware that you're paying a price. You just don't feel right. You may just feel like that old saying, you know, if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. There may be things that you want to do that you don't believe you can do because you were told that you shouldn't or you couldn't. And that makes living less fun than it needs to be. And in my show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. Because in the area of their work, they are very definitely who they really are. And the two women who I'm interviewing today are very definitely who they really are. And it is a pleasure and a joy to listen to them. And it will be a pleasure and a joy for you to come and see them at Sarasolo. Sarasolo 2016 is running two consecutive weekends, January 23rd and 4th, and January 30th and 31st. There are four performances on each day at 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. They are very different and all hand-picked by the coordinators, Annie Morrison, Blake Walton, and David Coyle. The two women whose interviews I am airing today are the bookends of the first day. Christine Alexander will open the show on Saturday, January 23rd at 1 o'clock, and Carolyn will close the show on that day at 7 o'clock. And so now, let me introduce one of the stars in Sarasolo 216, and that is Carolyn Michael. Carolyn, as I say in the very beginning of the interview, is one of the most versatile actors there is, and her performance will be her demonstrating several of the many, many characters that she has played, some of her favorites. But here is Carolyn telling her very own story, and so here now is Carolyn Michael. Okay, so here I am with Carolyn Michael. In all the time that I know you, you have been, well, maybe one of the most versatile actors I've ever seen.
Thank you.
Well, my God.
That's a very nice way to start out the interview. I like that.
Well, you've done everything.
Well, I started out I started out in kindergarten raising my hands as a tulip.
As a tulip?
So I started
like this,
out,
you mean two hands up?
Two hands up. So I started out playing a tulip, and people applauded, and I really liked that. And then later on, I went to a girls' school, and I played the boys' roles because I was dark-haired and sort of a character actress even then. I played all the boys' roles. And so I had an early start of playing men and plants. And
variety.
And when I was 12, I played the mother in a Bird's Christmas Carol at the little drama school I went to.
Did you grow up?
I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. And I did drama. I went to a drama school, and I also took a lot of dance. And I was a very shy little girl, so it was a way that I could express myself in a controlled way. I found that I had an ability to do this, and it brought me attention. And I was felt more comfortable on stage than I did interacting in my real life. And a lot of performers say that it's not, you know, people are always shocked that performers are shy. Essentially, there are a lot of us who are shy and then have these sort of other skills that we bring to the table. So yeah, I grew up as a shy little girl in St. Louis, Missouri, and went to theater school and danced a lot, went to dancing school, and then at the Temple, I instead of studying Hebrew, I was in the dramatics class and I played Pincus Pinocchio in the Purim play. So another boys' role, but nevertheless a leading role, so I liked it.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have a brother and a sister. They're both older than I am. And my sister was they were both actually interested in theater. My brother, in fact, cast me as Pincus Pinocchio in the Purim play at Temple. And my sister went to Pasadena Playhouse. They never pursued it as professionals. I did.
Pasadena Playhouse in California?
In California, that Pasadena Playhouse.
When she grew up?
Yes. When she was young, right out of high school. I mean, she was right out of high school and went there for a summer.
Ah.
and then auditioned for the Neighborhood Playhouse, and then decided to get married because that's what she really wanted to do.
Yeah. Okay, so it's sort of in the family.
Yes, my mother was a pianist. My father was an artist who translated his skills into the advertising business. And when I was a little girl, they took me to symphonies and plays, and I loved it. I loved it from the very second I first saw Mary Martin fly across the stage. I went, oh.
Yeah. So your parents, I mean, I guess they were okay with all of these little actors running around. I mean, they didn't discourage any of you. They didn't say...
Well, my brother never really did it. He played in theater when we were young. No, they encouraged all the creativity in the house, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they ever thought that any of us would go into it professionally, although they thought maybe my sister would, because she did go to Pasadena Playhouse and got into the Neighborhood Playhouse, as I said, but then didn't pursue it. So they were supportive when I pursued it.
So then what did you do? I mean, after, you know...
Well, I graduated high school. After I graduated the girls' school, and in the later years, I actually got to play women. I think my first female role was Anne Frank in The Diary of Anne Frank when I was a sophomore. And so that was like one that catapulted me to stardom in my high school. And then I went on to be able to play the leading roles from then on in school. And then I went to Boston University and trained and got my Bachelor of Fine Arts in acting and got serious training and good training, very good training that has stood me in good stead my entire career. Very good basic skills to be a professional.
I'm just curious, you're not shy now.
Well, I consider myself shy.
Do
now.
You?
I consider myself a shy person who has developed good skills to compensate. So
yeah.
So I don't know, I don't, but inside I feel shy.
You still feel like,
even shy.
Though the behavior,
right.
You don't come across as a shy person.
Right. 400 years later.
Well, but it's interesting. I mean, are you really a shy person? Or are you no longer a shy person, but you feel like what?
I think I am still a shy person. I don't think that it's just an old perception. I think that I feel that's who I really am. And I think it's based on the fact that I'm very, very vulnerable and very sensitive. And most people don't see that in me either.
Yeah.
Most people see my coping skills and my take charge skills those sorts of things. But I am extremely sensitive. And so there's a part of me that I protect.
You have to protect, right. And actually those skills...
And people would want me to, because they wouldn't want to see this, you know, sort of blubbering... sensitive person. Oh my God, what's wrong with her? So
I'm not sure that's true. But in fact, you have you certainly use that on stage.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You find you let her.
She gets.
That's right.
Okay, you get to play now.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's great. So actually, I mean, you've done some extraordinary stuff with yourself. I mean, you have become able to do a whole range of behaviors whenever they're appropriate.
Well, that's the joy of being an actor is that you get to experience all facets of being a human.
Right.
Because you do things on stage that you wouldn't do in real life. You know, we play murderers, we play liars,
dogs.
I played a dog. Yes. And we play all sorts of, you know, wonderful facets of humanity or the animal kingdom. But even that dog was you know, meant to be sort of human. That was, we're talking about the Gurney play,
right,
called Sylvia, and that was a great experience playing that play. That she was meant to be sort of the other woman in the play, mm-hmm. a real cute dog, streetwise dog.
Okay, so from that first moment, did you always want to do this? Was there something else you wanted to do?
I never wanted to do anything. So at one point, I thought maybe I'd dance, because I did, as a child, I danced, but. Somewhere deep inside, I don't think even on a conscious level, but unconsciously, I knew that I wasn't ever going to be good enough to be a professional dancer. I was a move weller. I dance really, really well, but because I don't have much extension and I have flat feet and I sort of didn't have the body for it. I was like great from the waist up. And so it's
not, yeah, right.
So somewhere along the line, I think unconsciously, when I was a, you know, when I was in high school, really, I knew that my skills were would take me farther as an actor than a dancer, and so I loved dancing, and I always dance, and I still do. But I knew that I would never be good. I would never be as good as you need to be, and so I easily transitioned out of that desire and kept wanting to be an actor. And so I went to Boston University, and then I went to New York and studied some more, and you know, knocked around New York trying to get little off Broadway jobs and try to knock on doors. And you know, I was putting my picture and resume under agents' doors. You couldn't even like see them. You would have to walk around to these big buildings and shove your picture and resume under the door. It was so humiliating and terrible. And I mean, I remember once I went to a cattle call for some show like No 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 Net kind of thing, where you had to dress up in, you know, sort of little 20s things and tap, and I thought, oh, I'll dress like this, and I did. And of course I went there, and there were 400 young girls, cute young girls like myself,
dressed like this,
dressed like that. And so you know, I got lucky, and I did a bunch of summer stock, and started to, in addition to, you know, having had my Boston University training and now my New York training, I did some summer stock and got some practical training, and then I started to get little jobs in dinner theaters. And dinner theater, it became, in those days, dinner theater was really the training ground.
Mm-hmm. And you could really use it.
You could. In earlier days, it was summer stock, and summer stock was sort of on its way out in my era, and dinner theater was in, and it was a great training ground for us, because you really could go from theater to theater and do good work. And I joined the union by that time, and so I was able to sort of learn and grow, and with each new experience. And then I worked for I vacationed here in Sarasota, Florida I had vacationed here with my parents when I was a young girl, and then they bought a house here when I was a young girl, and so I would come back and forth from New York to here. Ultimately, I met Bob Turoff, who runs Golden Apple Dinner Theater, and he gave me a job in Butterflies Are Free and George M. And I think my first show was, you know, I Can't Hear You When the Water's Running, and then Mary Mary with him. So I did those four shows in one season for him, and was so happy to be in this environment and working. And I kept going back and forth between California and New York and here, and California and New York and here, and working, and you know. And then around, I don't know, several years later, Bob Turoff gave me an opportunity to direct. So I directed for him, and then I met Sid Caesar and worked with him in a play and directed him in a play. Or I should say negotiated. Didn't really direct him, I just negotiated the piece.
What about this, Sid?
Yeah.
And, oh, Sid.
Exactly. So from that relationship, Sid Caesar and I have had a remarkable friendship for all these years. We first met in 1976 when I was a tot in the business. And so it's been marvelous. We've worked together for many, many years. I was on Broadway with him when he took a review to Broadway in 1989. And I also, the last thing I did with him, which I think is the last thing he did other than doing some, you know, sort of guest Kennedy Center appearances, was in Los Angeles at the Alex Theater in Glendale, where we performed Beethoven's Fifth Symphony with a symphony orchestra as a husband and wife argument.
Oh.
And it's a sketch that he did initially with Ninette Fabre, and then he put it in his act, and I did it with him. And Imogene Coca had also done it with him.
I think I've even seen it. I think I saw it.
It's on YouTube now.
Yeah, I think I saw it in one of those retrospectives. With Imogene Coca, I think.
You must have seen it with Nanette. You must have seen it with Nanette, because Imogene did it the way I did it in later life. She didn't do it. The original was done with Nanette Fabre.
Maybe
Nanette
that's
Fabre.
What I saw.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's an amazing piece.
Yeah.
It's great.
So that, you know, that's one of those sort of wonderful adventures you have in life. Sid Caesar is a wonderful comic genius.
How old is he now?
I never remember how old he is. He's in his 80s, and he's great. He's frail now, but he's mentally he's certainly all there. And
is he still in L.A.?
He is still living in his home in L.A., where he's lived for many, many years with his wife Florence, who's just fabulous. And they've been together forever. So, my career has taken me in many, many diverse areas.
So am I hearing that you wound up more and more in Sarasota? Is that what happened?
That's what happened. And so I sort of made a passive move here, because I kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And then ultimately I just sort of never left. And I was having all these opportunities, both directing and acting, and so I stayed. It was the best thing I could have done for myself without even making it a conscious decision. I sort of followed my heart, as it were, mm-hmm. and it was...
Or your feet.
My feet, yeah. or the jobs, as
yeah,
it were.
Yeah, right.
So I love living in Sarasota. I think it's a beautiful place to live, and it's a terrific arts community. When I was a kid, I used to go to the Oslo and watch the plays, and I thought, someday I want to be good enough to be able to be on that stage and do that. And so I really didn't even know really consciously that it was, I mean, I thought that, but I also thought, well, I want to be a big TV star too. But, you know, you think that too. But I think that I did fulfill my own personal dream about being able to be here and have a life as a theater artist.
Yeah.
And have a life.
Yeah.
And challenge myself with all these different roles. So I've had tremendous opportunities, and it's been a joy and a blessing. And then I met my wonderful husband.
Yes.
I just got married 7 years ago, so, and I'm no spring chicken.
You waited a long time to get married.
I did wait a long time to get married. I think I got messages from my mother to do what you need to do. And I was in that transition generation, as you were,
uh-huh.
that we were the ones who were sort of the groundbreakers for now you can sort of have it all. But we were the people who were trying to have the career and not necessarily be following a husband around from place to place. And so I wanted to be free to do that. And
well, this is interesting.
My idea of a husband was, oh, I have to follow him from place to place. Now, that's probably not true, but that was my idea of what a husband was. So I sort of avoided doing that for all those years, because I didn't want to, I was worried that I would give up too much of myself and what I wanted. I had relationships, I had great relationships, and I certainly, you know, had affairs with people and had a really good time. Mm-hmm. And then the right person came along in my life and made me marry him, and it was great.
But do you think that your sister would have liked to have had her career as well, or?
No, she did what she wanted to do. She really does not have any regrets, and neither do I. That's not true. I do regret, there's a part of me that still regrets the fact that I do not have my own child, because I think that as a woman, that's a life experience that, oops, I forgot to do that.
Yeah.
I do regret that. But then I think of all the carpooling and all of that, and then I go, oh, well, it's fine. And children don't always turn out to be exactly the fantasized image of what you would like them to be. And I have lovely nieces and nephews who are great friends of mine, and so they're my sort of surrogate children. I think nowadays people do manage to balance it out and do both. I think you can. I think it's hard, and I know a lot of people, a lot of actors and actresses who do not have children because they did what I did, which is they became dedicated to roaming around the country,
yeah,
playing in plays like a traveling minstrel.
Yeah, a gypsy.
A gypsy. Mm-hmm. But the reality is I have not been a gypsy for many years. I've lived in Sarasota now basically for
right.
many, many years, and I travel right. every now and then to do plays, but not that much. Mostly I work in this vicinity.
Here. And do you want to talk a little bit about your commitment to causes?
Sure. Well, I have found that in order to not be totally selfish and a total crazy person, it has been my great joy to be involved in a number of charitable endeavors that bring more to my life than I bring to the charities. But it's a great outlet. It's a great way to feel that you're contributing to the world. And that's one of the other great things about living here in Sarasota is that you really can have an impact on the community. And you can see your impact in the community because it's a small enough place, and yet it's an enlightened enough place to be able to enlist people to follow your dream, to follow your cause, to put together a big AIDS benefit. I've done AIDS benefits for 20 years when it was starting in 1987, when it wasn't so
yeah.
popular or known to do that. And so I've been involved in doing AIDS benefits, and I've been involved in the Boys and Girls Club, and I've been involved in all the arts organizations and the Arts Council and Planned Parenthood and you name it. I've sort of been involved in it, in all the major causes. Not AIDS is probably the only disease I've been involved in.
it occurs to me that that is a way that you spend that what might otherwise be maternal energy.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
You caretake.
Yes. Yes, I do. And I get to use my, I usually do it in terms of using my theatrical skills to produce events and shows that will benefit organizations. So I, at the same time as I get to play in my own kind of sandbox, I get to benefit an organization or organizations at the same time. And that's extraordinarily
lucky.
Rewarding.
Yeah, it is.
Very rewarding. And it also gives me a sense of myself that is not solely related to having to do plays in order to feel like I'm a person. You know, it gives me a larger sense of myself because I interact in the community. I have more to do. I once asked Babe Weiler, who was this terrific woman who died in her sleep when she was 94 years old.
I know who she was.
And she's the yoga. Yeah,
right?
She taught yoga up until, like, you know, the day before she died kind of thing. And I once asked her, what's your secret? You have such a positive attitude and you're so great and you're so healthy. And she said, it's very important to stay involved with something outside of yourself. Very important to be involved in. She went and taught yoga and she volunteered at one of the thrift shops. And that's what she said. And I think she's right.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
I think she's right. I think that it's very important to make sure that you have projects. As Billa says in the South Pacific, I like to have projects.
But I also think that the projects have to have meaning for you.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's clear to me that pretty much everything you do has meaning to you.
Yes, I can't do it unless I can sort of get emotionally behind it.
It's a kind of integrity.
I hope so. I try to live a life of integrity. I think integrity is very, very important. And at the end of the day, I have to go to sleep with myself. And so my own integrity is very important to me, which is not to say I'm a saint, because I do, you know, little things like anybody else, but I do endeavor.
I think
And I'm plagued by that. When I do feel like I've fudged on something or cheated on, it's not cheat, I don't cheat, but, you know, cheat in my own mind.
Yeah,
cheat.
Not lived up somehow
not lived
to
up
your
to
own
my own
standard.
Yeah, I torture myself a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I want to tell you that that's clear and that it's lovely.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I think this is a personal opinion based on what's important to me, but I think integrity is underrated and underused.
Clearly, in our society, I think it is.
Yeah, and so it's really, it's lovely to see, you know, that it's not, it's like, you know, it's not out of date. And you know, I think that must be at least part of why you're so good at what you do.
Oh, you're very sweet. I don't know. I do know that I'm out there endeavoring every day to sort of be the best person I can be. And some days I'm succeed more at that than other days, you know.
Well, but I think skill can only take you just so far as an actor. And that authenticity is really what makes the difference, what makes a person believable on stage. Not just that they have, you know, good training and good skills. And you have all of that, Carolyn.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Is there anything you would like to say? Is there anything you would like to plug?
Well, I hope people will come. I hope people will buy tickets to all the theaters.
and
come to the theater.
And support the theater.
And support the theater and see live theater. There's nothing like the interaction between an audience and the people on stage, and it's way different from watching a movie because the people on stage are live and there's a synergy that happens between the live actors and the live people in the audience that's different every single performance, and there's nothing like it. So I encourage people to buy subscriptions to theaters, to all theaters.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for this.
It's great talking with you.
Well, as Carolyn said, support the theater. And she was self-deprecating enough not to say, come out and see me. So I will say it for her. Come out and see the remarkable Carolyn Michael on Saturday, January 23rd at 7 o'clock at Crocker Church at the Sarasolo 216 One Person Play Festival. And also, come out and see the
I don't know what the adjectives are for Christine. The delightful, the charming, the adorable, the irrepressible Christine Alexander. And here now is Christine telling her story. I am here with Christine Alexander. And I'm explaining to Christine that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Okay, so now, how do you define the art to which you are giving your life?
I say I own a laughter company. I go into businesses and I do team building and, you know, collaboration and, you know, just an hour of laughter or whatever they need, you know, morale boosters.
And how do you do that?
Well, it's the improv techniques to make better humans.
Yes, well, we can all use a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I only ask one question, and it is, do you remember the first moment in your life when it felt good to make people laugh, when you noticed that you had an impact on other people? Any of that? You're shaking your head, so I guess you do.
No,
so good, tell me.
I remember I was in high school, and I was cast in a play called Gift of the Magi. I was in a Christian high school. And I was in a small role, and I was the neighbor, and I had to come in for a little, you know, bit. Real quick, and I asked the director if I could be a kleptomaniac in that moment. If I could steal the scarf off of her door and shove it in my purse before she turned around. And the director was like, absolutely, yeah, sure. So I did this, and on stage, the other actor turned around perfectly when I was like the last moment of, you know, stuffing it in my purse. And the laughter that came from that Christian school auditorium, I looked at it like, there's my drug, you know, I mean, like, I need to do that more. It was just immediate.
Right. Okay. So now, being in the play, did you have aspirations before mm-hmm. that?
I think that I've always been, loud with my body. I was a cheerleader, you know, I played volleyball, I did softball, you know, basketball, only because I was forced to because I could not dribble. So yeah, I've always performed for my family or just been crazy and outgoing and stuff. So
Back up. Mm. Performed for my family.
Yes. Like, you know, doing the little drummer boy on my knees or, you know, I just being. It wasn't ever like, you know, here, you know, hey guys, watch me. It was always just like me, my personality.
Right. And they watched you.
Yes. And laughed.
And they watched you and they laughed.
Yes.
Yes. So, you know, I'm assuming that this way of being in the world began very young.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
And so while it wasn't any kind of conscious thing, maybe unconsciously, you always had a sense that it was good to be watched, that if you were watched, people had a reaction to that, that you had an impact, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I feel like when I was in high school, we were in our senior year, and we were sitting at the baccalaureate, you know, like conference or whatever, and the guy is telling you, you're going to die, you're dying, you know, like all this horrible stuff. And somebody asked me, you know, where are you going to college? And I was like, I have no idea. What are you talking about? And they're like, you haven't applied for college? No, I'm going to be an actor. You know, I just kind of knew it. I was like, I'm going to be an actor. So then I went to college, and I went to Bob Jones University.
Okay, hold on, back up. So this is after the Gift of the Magi.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Gift of the Magi happens, and you're how old?
Probably in like 8th, 9th, 10th grade.
Oh, okay.
But then when I was in my senior year, I was Anne in Cheaper by the Dozen. And we just recently found the VHS tape of that. And I act like this! I don't even need dinner! What are you talking about? I mean, it's hilarious. I have a perm and big glasses. I might have braces.
Okay, wait. I want to back you up still yet.
Yes.
So we have you the 8th and the 9th grade. We have this kid who already knows that people watch her, that she has an impact, that feels good, that that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And then in the 8th grade, we have this pivotal moment where, first of all, it occurs to you to do this funny thing.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that in itself is pretty remarkable, I think. You know, that not how many kids in the 8th grade are telling the director, I want my own piece of business, you know. I mean, really, it's, you know, it is, you know. But already
you have the sense you can do that. I have ideas. I have physical business. I can do that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really, frankly, that the director said in the middle of this Christian piece that you could do this particular piece of business of kleptomania
right.
is in itself pretty remarkable, I think.
I know.
You know, I mean, good for whoever that person was.
Absolutely.
Right, okay. So then life gives you the light bulb, you know, the neon goes on and solidifies, I think. Mm-hmm. It isn't so much that it happens in that moment, but it solidifies what's been happening all along. Oh, yeah, right, this, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay, so now, is there a drama class in school? Mm-hmm. Do you take acting lessons? Do you do anything about it?
No, I think there was just like, you know, a play at the end of the year or something.
And you
that we did.
Always decide to try and be in it?
Yeah, since I was in The Gift of the Magi, I was trying to be in it. I think one year I had to produce it, you know, they had to switch us around and the other stuff. And I like the back end too, you know, like moving out the pieces and building them and stuff. So that was really cool. Yeah.
But you did. You not only made this intellectual decision, but you acted on it.
Yes. Well, then we go to college, right?
Yes,
so
right.
I go to the...
So, and I just want to stop.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I'm really
I love
sorry.
You.
But I want it to be a through line, right?
Yeah.
So that by the time this girl says to you where you're going to college, it's in stone.
Well, the reason why it's in stone was because I was also in band. I played percussion. And each year we would go to Bob Jones University because we were a Christian school, so
uh-huh,
we'd go there
uh-huh.
and compete. So I knew this campus very well.
Uh-huh.
But it was the strictest school in the world.
Hard to imagine you there.
Yeah, so my story is I get there, I go see my guidance counselor, and I said, I want to be an actor.
Right.
And the great thing about Bob Jones is that they have an amazing, like, Oslo rep kind of situation going on. So I really wanted to be in that. And he's like, no, you want to be a public speaker. And I was like, no, I really don't. I want to be an actor. And he's like, no, you're going to be a public... And I'm like, you don't even know, like, I don't know who you are.
Right,
why are you
right,
saying
right.
this? And so then I think the pinnacle moment for him to say, like, nope, public speaker was like, he's like, okay, what did you bring to, you know, do your monologue? And I was like, you know, I think it was like John 3:16, for God so loved the world. And I could only think of those, like, three words. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And he's like, honey, just you're public speaker. So then I only lasted there a semester. Like, after the one semester, I called my mom. I was like, please, can I come home? And she's like, yes. It turns out...
Yes, now that
I
you
am
are,
going
right.
to become a Olivia.
Right, right.
It's happening.
Right,
so
right.
he was right, you
right,
know?
Right,
like,
right,
oh,
right.
those men.
Okay, so you go home.
So then I come home. And, you know, I work, you know, retail jobs and stuff. And I get married and divorced. And then it's 2001. And my neighbor says to me, like, if you... don't stop talking about getting on stage or doing some acting, you know, I'm going to kill you. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to live next to you anymore.
Okay, but so this has never gone away.
No.
You do all this nonsense,
right.
but it's still always there.
It's constant. So I look in the internet or the paper or whatever, and there was an ad for an improv class at Florida Studio Theater, and it says, no scripts required. And I was like, that is me.
Right.
I don't even know what this improv is, but no scripts required, I'm in.
Right.
So I ended up taking the very first class that FST offered, you know, improv-wise, in 2001, in January, and now it's, you know, it's 2015.
Right.
I haven't left. I say they built the new improv theater for me because I've been there so long. But so when I took that class, that first class, 2 hours of improv, and we were literally like, we didn't even talk. We didn't even use our words. We were, you know, like miming folding sheets and, you know, like seeing how many things, you know, just different weird things. For those 2 hours, my little voice in my head that's like, you're not gonna, la, 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 she just shut up. You know, she was just gone. I mean, as soon as the 2 hours is over, she was back. You know, did you do good enough? But it was the thing that I was like, I was in. I was instantly in.
Yeah. It yet again, you knew it when you saw it.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Okay. Oh yeah.
All right. Okay. So.
So now it's, you know, 14 years later, and we perform every Saturday, and now we're opening, you know, Friday nights coming up here soon. We have a new improv director, and my world, My world
well,
changed.
Well, we, meaning?
FST, Florida Studio
That
Theater.
You are part of the troupe.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm part of that professional troupe since the very beginning. I'm the only one left from the very beginning.
Wow.
There's one other guy who's there, but he wasn't there at the very, very beginning.
Right.
So weird.
And you said we're going to, on Friday nights.
Yeah, we're opening a new show up on Friday nights.
At
Florida Studio Theater.
Uh-huh.
So there's more opportunities. So my life changed that moment that I took that class.
Uh-huh.
Because if I hadn't taken that class, I would still probably be in retail doing nothing and not
unhappy.
Yeah, and totally unhappy. So I owe everything, my new life, to Rebecca Hopkins at Florida Studio Theater, because she took improv years, you know, in other places and brought it to Sarasota. And if she didn't have that mind to do that, I feel like she was brought here just for me, you know? Like, I keep it all, it's mine.
Too many people would have had that experience and not been able to run with it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So I think those experiences are out there. It might not have been this one. There are, you know, but it was your ability and really your courage and your willingness to be who you are that allowed you to say yes to it. Okay, so take me through how it developed. I mean, it's 15 years now, so...
I know.
So
that's great. So I think in 2006, we started another troupe, like a spinoff troupe, with Rebecca's blessing, and we called it Becky's Rejects. I produced it. I wasn't even in the show, and we did a musical improv. Then we started another troupe in 2008 called Lazy Fairy Improv, and we played at the Players Theater once a month, and we still have that troupe. And now I've said, all right, fine, I'm an entrepreneur, I own a laughter company,
uh-huh.
And I that's what I do now. I do team building and workshops and make people laugh, and I have a commitment that I tell people at the very beginning, because, you know, like yesterday, the lady had gotten a gift certificate from her daughter in Massachusetts. They took an improv class in Massachusetts, and she wanted to give it to her mom in Sarasota for Christmas. So she found me on the internet, and she said, do you
wow.
do this? I'm like, yeah. So I go to her house, but she brought 10 friends over, but she didn't tell them what they were coming for. So
Aye.
In those situations, there's so many people who do not ever want to get in front of people. So I open every workshop with my commitment of providing a safe
mm-hmm.
and courageous place for people to have fun and play in. And you can just see their shoulders go, oh, good, thanks.
Yeah, right,
oh, my
right,
gosh.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I won't make you do anything. And I also tell them that there are absolutely no mistakes in improv.
Yeah, they can't do it wrong.
You can't make a noise wrong.
Yeah, right.
Whatever comes out of you is perfect.
It's perfect. Right, right, right.
So at the end of each hour that I teach, they're so empowered and confident and happy and laughing, and it's just a joy.
It's glorious.
It's glorious.
Right. Okay, good. So so let's talk about what you're going to do at Sarasolo.
Yes, let's
yes.
get to that.
right.
I'm really excited. You know, when Annie Morrison, Broadway star, calls
mm-hmm.
me and says, hey, I think you can do a one-woman show, I go, all right, if you're directing it, I will do whatever you say.
Okay.
So together we came up with an idea to improvise a one-woman show. And I'm a little terrified because I like to use improv as my excuse for procrastination. Like, I'm an improviser. It'll come out of me.
Right.
So I don't prepare as well
right.
as I could. So
right.
I'm in preparation mode. So I want the audience to be a part of the progress rather than to watch a product.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we're going to put cards around the stage. And before I come on, the audience is going to come on stage and they're going to write a suggestion to whatever is on the card. So I may have props. What does this prop make you think of? Da, 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 da. And I won't put, you know, like if it was an apron, for instance, I would fold it up in a way that it doesn't look like an apron. And you can just see the pattern, and they would say something from that. So it wouldn't be like that chef, you know, it wouldn't be so...
Right.
So I'm helping them be more creative in that sense. And then, so I'll come out and I'll explain to them that I want them to be part of the progress. But I think I'm going to keep the fourth wall, but I'm not sure. because I'm so comfortable with other people on stage. I feel like I need to go, you know, like, you know, sometime I might need to hug an audience member just for safety. And so I'll do probably three characters and like start a character and just kind of get to know that character with these cards. And you'll know which card I'm choosing because you wrote it and put it right there. And if you write candy cane, I might not use the actual word candy cane. I might talk about something Christmassy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there's a
You'll let it lead you.
Right. So we'll figure out these three characters, and then at the end, I'll have these three characters in some kind of story together. Mm-hmm. This is my
this
idea.
This is your proper definition.
Right. I haven't done this yet. This is the idea that's out. I feel confident with that.
It's very exciting.
I'm excited about it.
Okay, are there other things that are coming up for you that you want to talk about?
Florida Studio Theater, number one, is just busting for us. Like I said, we have a new director of improv, Will Luera, who came from Chicago, and he's just fantastic. You know, he's just kind of just taking what Rebecca has built and making it better. You know, he's opening it up to the community. We had auditions. We have new people coming in. So I think the improv shows there are really what we need to look at. Mm-hmm. I teach there. I teach improv for performance. And I teach another class called Forever Improv. So if you've taken all of our classes and you don't really necessarily want to perform, you can take this class and still come and get that girl stop talking in your head for 2 hours. Then in March, I'm doing another one woman show. I had another friend come to me and say, I have a great idea for you. It's called How to Be a Floridian in an Hour. And so I'm going to explain to people, you know, like when you come here and feed our seagulls, they, number one, will mock you with their laugh. And number two, we're going to go up north and we're going to feed your groundhogs and your chickens. All right? So don't do that.
Right.
Don't do it. Right. So there's just a bunch of, you know, Floridian facts. I mean, so much happens here. We have a Twitter. There's a Twitter out there called Florida Man. Because Florida man does blank.
Oh, you're kidding.
It's amazingly hilarious. There's a girl out there who found a missile, and she shot it into a car. Now, that's not the craziest part about her. The craziest part is her name is Crystal Methany. I mean.
So you don't even have to go looking for this.
You don't have to make this up. It's right there.
Right. Okay. All right. So let's just talk a little bit about Sarasolo, the concept, what it's trying to achieve. Do you know?
I know a little bit. I know that Annie is like a powerful solo performer.
Right.
And the brainchild of hers and Blake and David Coles is to empower these different solo artists in one place, as well as opening it up to the theaters. You know, like, how can we make this a festival? How can we open it up and play together? You know, so I really enjoy that aspect of collaboration. It's my thing. Yeah. Between those weekends, there's going to be a bunch of workshops, and I'm teaching a masterclass improv.
Okay, so if you are you curious about improv, you can come and see Christine at
Crocker Memorial Church. It's such a great little space.
It's adorable.
Ugh.
Right? But it's not that big, so if you want to see any of the shows, you want to get your tickets now. And to get tickets for all of this, go to the website, www.sarasolo.org. And when you go there, there'll be a button to click for get tickets and also to get the schedule for the rest of the solo festival. And please come out and support it. This is an opportunity for local artists, but it's also an opportunity to bring new and different entertainment to Sarasota. Okay, so I ask another question, and that is, you're kind of an interesting person because while you knew very young what you wanted to do, who you really were, you had to take a break from that and then rediscover it and then jump in with both feet.
Sure.
So you've been doing this for about 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So could you just think for a minute and say what it's been like to give yourself to this work?
Oh my gosh. It's going to make me cry just hearing you say that question. It's changed my life, you know? I mean, I have a supportive husband who believes in me, and gosh, it's really, if I didn't have improv, it would, I think I would still make people laugh, and that would be my outlet, you know? But I'm so grateful that I have this. And, you know, people are so happy after a show seeing me or seeing our shows and or taking a workshop. I can't imagine living without this happiness.
That's a great place to stop. Come out and see Christine Alexander.
Yes.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you.
So you can hear that both Carolyn and Christine demonstrate what I am trying to demonstrate with the Lynn Show. And that is that being yourself, being who you really are, is what makes life joyful. Not that it makes life easy. Not that all problems go away. Not that everybody wants you, loves you, and wants to hire you, but that when you are doing what you were meant to do, it is joyful. Carolyn, who knew from the moment she put her hands up as a tulip, and then from the moment she saw Mary Martin fly across the stage, that she loved this. You can hear it in the way she says it now. When she says it now, you can hear that 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, and the power of the thing she saw that she needed to be, wanted to be. And luckily for Carolyn, she came from a family that supported that, that didn't say, don't do that, or do something else, or what do you think, or who do you think you are, or any of that, which is what so many creative children experience. And Christine, whose life led her away from what she always knew she wanted to do, who she was, and who found her way back and embraced it with everything that she has. And both of these women, using their talents, using their joy, using themselves to enhance the lives of other people. Both of these women being themselves, and that is all they need to make the extraordinary difference they both make in this world. So I hope, as I always do, that having listened to these extraordinary women tell the stories of the way they recognized and embraced who they really are so that they could live the life they were meant to live. And of course it is my hope that by listening to them, you might be inspired to ask yourself, is this how you feel about your life? Can you say, as Christine says, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have this special thing in my life. I don't know what else I would be. It is me. It brings me the joy and pleasure of my life. And it is a joy and pleasure to give it away. Are you saying this about your life? Are you getting up in the morning excited to do and be what is in your life? Well, if you're not, and if you sometimes wonder, if there was something you could have been, could have done, someone you could have been, but somehow that didn't happen, it may not be too late to recover what you might have had to sacrifice, what you might have been cheated out of. It may be nobody's fault. Maybe with the best of intentions, your family tried to point you in a direction that they thought would help you make money and therefore be secure, but maybe that was pointing you away from where you really needed to be. It may not be anybody's fault, but it is your life after all, and you do have the right to live it the way you were meant to live it.
So, if you have any idea that there might be something you left behind, something that you could have done or might have done or want to do, that is, of course, the work of therapy. And if you want to talk about that, you can go up on my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. You can click on the email tab and ask me any questions you might have. And please do go to www.sarasolo.org. See all of the wonderful performances you can see on the two weekends, January 23rd and 4th, and 30th and 31st. You will see Carolyn and Christine on Saturday the 23rd. And you could find me on Sunday, January 31st at 3 o'clock. I am doing my one-woman show, Bashert, Some Things Are Meant to Be. As always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use. Something that inspired you, will get you to come out to Sarasolo, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have gotten